We good? There it is. All right, it's Fairfield County Live and Local. I am joined today by a guy who I've heard your name for years now, just since I started playing music in Connecticut and around New England. It's Mystic Bowie from Talking Dreads. Thank you for being here today, man.
Thanks for having me, man. This is awesome.
You got it, dude. So, I mean, you know, whether it's Talking Dreads or you've toured with the Tom Tob Club, your own original material, you've done so many things. But before we get into all of that, I mentioned, you know, right at the start of this that I've heard your name for years. And I never realized until we agreed to do this interview, I have no idea where it came from at all. And what I was able to find online was that it was given to you by your tribe in Jamaica.
Correct.
But there has to be such a cooler story behind that. Tell me how you got your name.
Basically, I was born into a tribe called the Maroons, the Jamaica Maroons. And we were the very first freed black nation in the Western Hemisphere.
Wow.
We got our independence from Great Britain in January 6, 1738.
Wow.
Yes. And then, so we still maintain autonomy. Even when we live in the mountains of Jamaica, we still maintain our autonomy from Jamaica until today.
Really?
Yeah,
so it's its own individual nation.
Yes, we have. For example, I was Minister of Youth and Culture for that tribe for 11 years.
Wow.
Under the previous administration. So yeah, we have our own local government. So we're kind of like a state within a state, you know.
See, I'm so glad I asked this question. That's so cool, man.
Yeah, I didn't want to just answer you.
No, please.
I didn't just want to answer you without giving you some kind of background history of, you know, of my tribe. So basically, people are in the mountain. They're still grounded. When I say grounded, yeah, we have all the technology. We need all the technology to be to keep everybody updated and the young people educated. However, we still maintain tribal way of life, like herbal way, you know, herbal medicine, trying to live off the land. Like I still own a farm in Jamaica, which I go back and forth to maintain my farm.
Oh wow.
And I, you know, donate food from my farm to the school in the community, in the tribal community, and to just people all around, basically. So go back to the name.
Sure.
I was a kid. I forget how old I was, maybe 5-6 years old, and walking through my community, there was this old blind guy, the old tribal elder,
which sure.
Completely blind. Ever since I was born, he's blind. And I was walking past one day, and my grandfather's name is Charlie. And I was walking by, and he shouted out, heard me walking by, completely quiet, silent. And he called at me and said, Charlie boy. And so I stopped and said, how you know it's me? He said, because you're a mystic. I can feel whenever you pass here.
What's a mystic? At least in that context.
A mystic to him is like that special energy that almost like communicates spiritually with him.
Yeah.
You know, and then the Bowie is from just being sharp, you know. So he ended up giving me that name, Mystic Bowie. You know, he said, you're a sharp kid. It's like the Bowie knife.
Oh, that's so cool, man.
So, identify by.
Right. And your given name at birth was what again?
That name is, I cannot stand that name, but I'm just going to tell you anyway.
Okay.
No, I'm going to tell you anyway, because I need people to know.
Sure.
You know, I want to take a good look at me. And okay. Do I look like the name I'm about to say to you? Fitzroy Alexander Campbell.
Hold on. Let's really get a good. There we go. Fitzroy Alexander Campbell.
Yeah. Isn't that, that's Scottish.
That's a mouthful. That is a mouthful. There's a lot happening there. There's a lot to unpack.
Exactly. But those names were given, basically those are basically slave names, you know,
right.
Name that were given to folks back in the day. But man, each time I remember, I would go to Scotland to visit my friends and be like, whoa, come here, Fitzroy. You know, I'm like, oh, yeah. No, because they're so proud that I actually have that name.
Of course.
And so many Fitzroys are there.
Sure. Sure. So that's their, yeah, right. That's their time to use the name.
But exactly. Exactly.
All right. Well, I can definitely agree that you definitely look more like a Mystic Bowie than a Fitz.
Thank you
Bowie.
Very much.
Yeah. No, that I could definitely get by. Well, so what, when did you move up to the Northeast?
Whoa. Actually, I moved to the States after I went to college in England. And I came back and I moved to the States in March of 1988. I moved to Florida.
Yeah.
And I was with the company that I would sing for that was booking me the shows. I explained to him that Florida is, for me, it's like a little bit too Jamaica.
Okay. All right. You know, similar to where you came from.
Yeah. If I'm going to leave Jamaica, a tropical island, I want to experience something different.
Right.
So then they moved me to New York City in August of 1991. They moved me to New York City.
Yeah.
And that was my, you know, created my foothold there, which I start singing. You know, he started booking me around New York. They got me an apartment at 91st and 1st.
Oh, I grew up on 85th and 1st.
I got really sick after like a few months because I couldn't sleep.
Right.
Because from where I'm from in Jamaica, we're isolated in what we call cockpit country of Jamaica. And it's okay. Like some of the high speaks in Jamaica. So it's very quiet. You know, all we hear at night is birds and animals, basically, and insects. And they dropped me at 91st and 1st. Is horns and sirens and yelling.
All day, too. First Avenue is such a busy street.
24 exactly. hours a day. So I couldn't handle it anymore. And I told him, I'm either going to move back to Jamaica or they got to do something. And right. I was, at the time, was dating a girl from Western Connecticut.
Ah.
So that's how I ended up moving out here and bought a place out there.
That's so, see, like, I love that impulse to put yourself in an uncomfortable situation. You know what I mean? Like, you're in Florida and you say, no, you know what? This is way too much like everything that I've experienced before. I've got to go and I've got to do something different. Like, does that apply to every aspect of your life? You know, like musically, are you always looking for like a new experience like that, a different challenging experience?
Yes, 100%. I am a very curious person. And I think this curiosity sometimes it gets me into tight spots. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I realized there are more. I accomplished more through those curiosity because of those curiosity, more than the negative. If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Without those curiosity, I would never end up singing with the Tom Tom Club. I would never have been singing with song and tour with Keith Emerson from Emerson, Lake and Palmer. Mm-hmm. I would never met all those people. I would never met most of those people if I wasn't this curious person who want to see more and want to experience more. So I have no regrets being that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So now you mentioned, you know, all the people that you toured with, you know, all the people that you've sang with. When did you decide to really like strike out on your own and start writing your own original material? Or were you doing it that whole time?
Actually, I've been doing my own material most of my life. The thing is this. None of my songs became a hit, per se. Sure. You know, I was a child performer. I've been singing and performing throughout the Caribbean since I'm 13 years old.
Yeah.
You know, I've been singing in the hotels. When I was 9, 10 years old, I started singing in the hotels. So I was always exposed to other type of music and people from all over the world because of all the, you know, my child labor experience.
right.
You know, so I, for example, in 1981, I remember performing in Bahamas for the John Cano Festival.
Yeah.
My booking agent had brought me there to perform. And, you know, we were staying at the Compost Point condominium. Right across the street was a Compost Point resort. Then next to the condominium I was staying in with my babysitter per se.
Okay.
Is Compost Point Recording Studios. And again, I was this curious kid. They made a mistake by telling me that there was a recording studio in the other building.
Did you sneak out at night or something like that?
I would climb out the window every night that lady went to sleep.
And how old are you at this point? You said you're like 13 or even young?
By then, I was turning 14.
Turning 14. Okay, yeah. Yeah.
You know, it was, that was a big mistake on their part. You know? So I would sneak out and I would go by and, you know, some of the guys, there was a lot of stuff going on back then. You know, there was a lot of drugs and partying and stuff going on. So they didn't want me to be exposed to that, to see that. You know what
sure,
I mean?
Sure, sure.
Which I respect them for that. Some of the people that's where I met almost every single person that I end up working with later on in life. Because at that, you know, at that age, 14 years old at Compost Point, you know, the place was owned by Chris Blackwell. Mm. That's where I met Chris and Tina. I'm Talking Heads and Tom
Talking
Heads,
yeah. First time. Chris France.
That's where
Tim,
I met Cindy Wilson, B-52s. That's where I met Keith Emerson. That's where I met Ringo Starr. That's where I met Grace Jones. Sly and Robbie, who I end up producing with now a few songs. They produced some few songs for me the other day. Yeah. That's where I met almost like everybody in the music industry, significant names that I've worked with. And it's that curiosity, go back to that, that gave me those opportunities.
Right, 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 right. Again, that like that need to get out of a comfortable situation.
Exactly.
Look for something new. Did they ever put you on any recordings when you were that young, or were you just like the kid in the corner?
No, they did not put me on any recording there. I did a recording when I was 9 years old back in Jamaica on Jack Ruby label.
Yeah.
This song didn't go anywhere. I have no idea what became of it. He passed away since then, and I've reached out to his family members. They cannot find the reel. Because what they would do back then in Jamaica, you know, reels are really expensive. It's not like here you could walk into a store and just buy a tape and walk into a studio. There, sure, they'd use the same reel to record a million people. They just keep overdubbing it.
Oh, wow.
You know, so you lose a lot of stuff. We didn't have the hard drive technology and those things back then.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's so funny to think about it, because today nothing gets erased ever. As soon as something exists, it exists forever in the ether, in the internet. Oh, wow, wow. That's and what year is this? This is, I'm guessing, what, like early 80s?
Yeah, because I was born in 1967, February 8th, 1967. And at the time, I remember I was discovered when I was 9 years old.
Right. Oh, so this is in the 70s still, right?
Yeah, okay. That's when they start having me record. I mean, I have, basically my mom would get paid to just send me to these sessions. I have no clue what was going on. You know? But at the same time, that curious child, once I hear about, whoa, somebody's going to come pick me up to record me, I ask no question. I'm gone.
So you were loving it from the day, yeah.
I loved every minute
of it. No. Okay. All right. Well, so let's go forward a little bit now. So you mentioned working with Chris Franz from the Talking Heads and Tina Weymouth, his wife. Is that is working with them kind of what inspired the beginning of Talking Dreads, which is your Talking Heads project now, which is actually, and I should mention, this Saturday at FTC. But where's the thing? I had a whole thing. Wait a minute. There we go. But sorry, to get back to my original question, was working with Chris and Tina kind of how you got into the Talking Heads music? And was that the original inspiration for Talking Dreads? Or, yeah.
No. Yes and no, but majority no.
Okay.
For me, meeting them back in the Bahamas as a teenager, and Chris Blackwell, I think I lost you there. I lost your audio.
Lost your audio. Hold on one second.
I can hear you again.
There we go. There we go. I got it back. Sorry about that.
No
problem. Start that whole answer over.
Hey.
It's live streaming, baby. That's how it's
going. That's what live is all about, man.
That's right.
You see, these little glitches to some might seem like a disappointment or a downfall. No, it's not. It literally just proves, legitimize the fact that we're doing a live interview.
That, see, this is why I love doing it this way. Even when even when you mess it up.
Exactly. Yeah. So back to the answer is yes, and majority no, and yes. And the no to that is Chris Blackwell, who owned the Compost Point Studios and was friends with Chris and Tina and everybody in Talking Heads. Basically, they would have the Talking Heads music would be playing in Jamaica as a child. So we always hear these things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then getting to meet them back in Bahamas, you start listening to their music even more because like, okay, I met this person. So let me start listening to their stuff. Then what caught me with Talking Heads music is the music itself is so rhythmic. It's so rhythmic. It's almost like it was so easy to transpose into reggae because it's very rhythmic.
So I was going to ask about that, if it was actually even more difficult to transpose into reggae. Because, like, I remember hearing Dub Side of the Moon when I was, like, 15. And I was like, okay, cool. I can see the progression from Pink Floyd to, you know, to that. But for your project, though, Talking Heads, it's so eclectic. And David Byrne's writing style is so all over the place. Sorry, you were about to explain this, though. How does it make it almost easier to transpose into reggae?
It was easy because the count of every single thing that Chris and Tina played on that rhythm section, the drum and bass,
yeah,
is very rhythmic. So it's actually easy. So in time, I didn't have to do much more, you know, except for sing it the way I want it and then change the chords to how I want it. One other thing I did also was I literally dissected the songs. The right. Musical part of it, I dissected it. I wanted was to make legitimize it as my style, reggae and ska, 100% my genre of music that I grew up in from my island. But at the same time, I wanted was to maintain some kind of dignity and respect for Talking Heads, you know, and David Byrne's lyrics.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So sure. That was the most difficult part, was to maintain that that Talking Heads feel while doing exactly what I wanted to do reggae wise. So what I did, I actually before I went into the studio to record, I made sure I wanted the recording to be done in Jamaica because I wanted real Jamaican musicians to play the music.
Right.
And that's what's going to give me that real Caribbean, that authentic Caribbean feel. Then what I did, I reached out to musicians and people from different walks of life that, you know, that would say yes to jump on the song on the record with me. For example, the song Heaven. Cindy Wilson from B-52s did the vocals with me on that one.
Oh, wow.
You know, we have Sly Dunbar, Robbie Shakespeare, those guys, legendary people that recorded, like, they literally recorded and produced, like, everybody. They recorded, you know, produced more people than the Gwen Stefani, the, you name it. They produced all those albums without people even knowing about them.
Yeah, yeah.
So I end up writing with them, producing with them, recording with them. Grace Jones's son, I recorded with him. So I wanted was to make it my own style, but at the same time, make sure I maintain that respect for Talking Heads' style and music. And the truth is, David Byrne's lyrics is, again, what piques my curiosity. Mm. Because it's so different. Nobody was singing like David Byrne. Nobody. I could not give David an A for vocals.
Sure.
But I can give David, I will give David an A+. For vocal style.
I mean, just like, you know, like songs like Once in a Lifetime. It's like nothing that anybody's ever heard before. and by the way, people watching should listen to your version of that song too, because it's fantastic. But I'm sorry, continue. I just wanted, I so agree with what you're saying, and I just wanted to jump in for a second.
No, I appreciate that, man. Thank you. Yeah. The compliment is highly appreciated. Yeah, so basically it came down to where me, you know, just doing my thing, expressing myself. And while I was on tour with Tom Tom Club, singing with Tom Tom Club, I remember offers coming in for Talking Heads reunion, Talking Heads, you know, reunion record, the reunion tour, whatever. And I, you know, Chris and Tina would be super pumped because they, you know, they love what they do. They still want to, you know, they still want to do their thing. And right. David have nothing to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So while in the middle of the tour, I got inspired where I would find myself singing Talking Heads music in reggae style. I start writing down ideas. So one day I turned to Chris and Tina while on the tour and said, what do you think about me, Mystic Bowie, redoing Talking Heads music in reggae? It will be called Talking Dreads.
Yeah.
And they both turned to me and said, you should definitely do it.
They were fans of the idea immediately.
100%.
Nice.
The cooler thing about that is even while I was in Jamaica recording, every single time I record one of the songs, I would actually email it to Chris and Tina and say, could you do me a favor? Give this a listen for me and give me your feedback.
And see, and that's such a rare thing, because there's a lot of bands out there, you know, whether you want to call it tribute acts, cover band, whatever, you know, there's a lot of them out there. There's not a lot of them that regularly get feedback from the actual band member themselves. So that's a pretty cool thing right there.
Yeah, because what I explained to them in the beginning, I did not want to be a cover band. I told them, right, I'm never going to do your songs exactly the way you did it.
Right.
I want to do Talking Dreads will be my rendition of your songs.
Yeah.
You know, so when I start sending the tracks to them, they're amazed to the fact that they absolutely loved it. So they keep listening and keep giving me their feedback. And even backtrack for a little bit. Before I actually recorded, flew to Jamaica to record, I had reached out to Seymour Stein at Warner Music. Seymour Stein was the owner of Sawyer Records. I was the first there. He actually discovered Talking Heads.
Yeah.
He discovered Talking Heads, the Ramones, and all those guys at CBGBs back in the day. And I had reached out to him, asked him about the idea. You know, told him, listen, I'm heading to Jamaica and I'm going to be recording Talking Heads. What do you think? And he said, you will have my blessing under one condition. And I was like, well, here I am standing in Warner's office.
Yeah.
Seymour Stein, the president, is telling me, going to give me conditions. So I was kind of, what is he going to come with? Then he said, you have to do one song on it for me. What's it called? Love Building on Fire.
That was his only condition. He just wanted
his only condition.
Specific song.
He loved the idea. He's like, why the hell didn't I think of that?
Great.
He actually asked me, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
He said, okay, you have to do Love Building on Fire. So I did. And then when the album was completely recorded and packaged, before we actually put it out there to the public, I went back to New York City to his office, brought him his copies.
Yeah.
Took some pictures with him and I holding them up. He listened to the entire album right in front of me. He would not let me leave that office until he listened to everything to make sure he was happy. And then he's like, I love this. Great job.
Wow. That's awesome. That must have been, that must have been a little weird though, sitting in like the office with this, you know, with this huge influential figure, listening to every single piece of you. I mean, that's terrifying for me. I would never want to do that with something of mine.
You know, I wasn't terrified because of my curiosity. But I think I was more want to learn from him.
Yeah.
I was more open to learn. I want to hear what he have to say, because whatever he have to say to me is going to inspire me to do something better. So I wasn't nervous. I was more excited. Like, man, I wonder what Seymour Stein is going to say to me now about this one. Like, yeah. I even called my kids on the phone. Like, I'm going to be meeting with Seymour Stein. They're like, what? I say, yep. I'm curious what he's going to say about this record. Like, you know, And it was all A plus on the record. And then another cool thing happened is when we did the first album release concert was at Fairfield Theater at the Warehouse again.
Yep.
That's why I keep going back there. It's hard for me to choose another venue in this area. That venue is always there for me.
Of course.
So I've been celebrating my birthday bash there for many years now. And that's where we're going to be Saturday, February 5 again.
I'm loving it. Yeah. Sorry. Keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. With the birthday bash, I did the album release concert there. I invited Chris and Tina and whoever could make Jerry Harrison. I invited David. Chris and Tina showed up. They were blown away. And we walked off the stage and they came up backstage and they took pictures with them holding the record up and talking about it. Have these video clips of them loving the record and complimenting what a great job. And so with all that, it made me feel like I did the right thing. Because there was, it proven to me that I was right to think that there are a fan base out there that needs Talking Heads music and their lyrics. They won't get it.
Right.
So I'm the next messenger to bring it to them the way I interpreted it.
Well, it's funny because like you said, it's surprising that no one's ever done it before. It almost seems like it's like tailor-made. Even the name Talking Dreads, like it's right there. But it is, man. I mean, you know, we've played on my Sunday night show on 95.9 The Fox. We've played Burning Down the House and Shakedown Street because you guys don't just play Talking Heads music either. So I want to transition though into talking about this birthday bash because it's happening this Saturday, February 5th, this coming Saturday, I should say.
Yeah.
What can people expect from this show? Because you're not just playing Talking Heads, you're playing a whole variety of music.
Yeah, basically, it's Mystic Bowie's Bob Marley's birthday bash. And this is one of those nights where I only play music that I recorded and that Bob Marley recorded. Nice. Why is that? Because my birthday is February 8th. Bob Marley's birthday is February 6th.
There you go.
So listen, man, you're getting all the Talking Dreads, all the Mystic Bowie and all the Bob Marley on one stage, on one show. What more could you ask for?
Right, right.
And then my friend, a couple of friends of mine from here and local guys from Fairfield, call them, said, Drop Party. Drop Party will be opening the show.
Love Drop Party. Love Jeff Wicken.
Fantastic. He's one of the most talented dude.
He does everything. It's crazy. Like the guy,
you know,
like,
he actually does live engineer for me sometimes.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's great behind the board, but like I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. He plays drums too. Like he's played, I've played with him as a keyboard player. He's played guitar with me before. I had no idea he was a drummer too. He gets like, I can do everything.
The kid is a freak of nature. Musically speaking.
That's right. So this Saturday, not only do you get Talking Dreads, but you also get a certified freak of nature in Drop Party featuring Jeff Wicken.
Exactly.
Certified. Actually, you know who I was talking to about him the other day was someone from your band, our good mutual friend, Tracy Ricalde, who also has a February birthday.
Oh, listen, man.
And she would kill me if I didn't mention that it's also her birthday celebration this
year. Yeah, we're going to get into that because right. I always try to embarrass her on stage about it too.
Oh, you got to.
She's my birthday girl, man.
She gets so upset too when you draw all the attention to her.
Wait, you know something? Okay, I'm going to draw a little more attention to Tracy.
Please do.
I remember when I met Tracy when she was 5 years old.
Yep.
I was performing at first night of Westport. And so all these kids would come up, get their face painted, whatever. I'd perform, I'd take breaks off the stage, come down and meet and greet them, get pictures with them. And a few years later, her parents uploaded this picture and said, Mystic Bowie, I'm bringing my daughter to your show. You met her when she was only 5 years old, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Here's a picture for her. I'm like, that's super cool. And she brought her to me and she was a young lady now.
Yep. Yep. I've seen that picture too. That picture is hysterical.
And now she's singing with me.
That's right.
We're singing right. together. We're writing music together. We're making art together.
But there it is, man. It's generational at this point. How cool is that?
Yeah, cool I'm loving it, man. And don't, I want to give a shout out, if you don't mind, to my daughter. My daughter, her name is Crystal Campbell, as in C-H-R-Y-S-T-A-L, Campbell, as in the soup. My daughter, she released 2 singles already, and I'm producing a few more with her right now as we speak. She's actually in a TV show coming out, I think it's coming out next month, called City on the Hill with Kevin Bacon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's an actress, singer-actress.
No way. So,
you know, I know she's tuning in, listening right now. That's why if I don't shout her out.
Got to shout her out. Crystal Campbell. She's going to choke me. Crystal Campbell. Check out all things Crystal Campbell. All things Jeff Wicken. All things Tracy Joe. And most importantly, to follow the theme, do stuff that makes you that you're curious about. Be curious. Get yourself into uncomfortable situations. Dude, thank you so much for sitting down with me today. People who are watching right now, Mystic Bowie's Birthday Bash featuring the music of Bob Marley, Talking Heads, and Mystic Bowie himself is going down this Saturday, February 5th at FTC. Tickets available at fairfieldtheater.org. And yeah, dude, again, thank you. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you. And big up to my management, Ed and Matt, KRM Rozak, you know, love you guys. And like I say, we have a significant, extensive tour lined up for 2022.
Yeah.
So talkingdreads.com, talkingdreads.com. You're going to find out that information. But, you know, we just got signed with Ketch Agency. And thanks to Matt and Ed for making that happen, you know, with Omni Management.
Yeah.
And so we're ready to roll, man. And hopefully this whole pandemic thing just get out of the way so we can do what we love to do. And thank you so much. I have to tell you, I've listened to the Fox almost every single day.
Oh, thank you, bro. I appreciate you.
Literally.
I appreciate it.
I listen to the Fox every day. you don't even realize that discreetly show up a lot of events in Connecticut, like town events, community events. Fox is always there.
Yeah, dude, we get around. We try to anyway.
You guys are you always there to represent, man. And I have a lot of, you earn my respect.
Dude, well, we appreciate it. And we're going to be playing your music tonight. So actually tonight on 95.9 FM, you can hear 2 songs from Mystic Bowie's Talking Dreads and a little clip of this interview too. I'm going to upload a little clip of this so that people can hear it and hopefully check it out. Hopefully go see this show. I actually wanted to mention, I almost forgot, but then you mentioned Matt Kalinske and I remembered new original material coming from you soon with possibly a couple of collaborations.
Yes.
I know it's a sensitive, secretive topic. So I'll let you take the lead as to what we talk about here.
It's fine because I'm excited and I always love to share my excitement with my fans. I don't have fans. I have fans, FAMS.
Fans.
Because I want them to be family. I need them to be a part of my family. I don't need fans just come and go. Fans just listen to your music, they come and go. I need family members who, you know, we can message each other and you come to the shows and we can say hello to each other on a personal basis.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about stuff. I need them to be excited. So yes, I'm going to be doing some collaboration. We're getting ready to start a writing project. I'm writing a few songs with John Popper, Blues Travelers. Also gonna be writing a couple of songs with a couple of the guys from Goose.
Yeah.
That's all I'm gonna give you for right now.
Okay. Hey, listen, that's plenty. And you might have heard it here first. Collaborations with Mystic Bowie with John Popper from Blues Traveler and some of the guys from Goose. Dude, that's something to look forward to right there. You know you gotta send those my way when you get them, man. I can't wait to play them on the air.
Without a doubt, brother.
I appreciate it, dude. All right. Mystic Bowie's Birthday Bash, Saturday, February 5th. Get your tickets at fairfieldtheater.org. Mystic Bowie, thank you, man. Stick around for 1 sec after I end the live feed. And tonight, 9 p.m., 95.9 FM, you can hear a clip from this interview, and you can hear 2 songs from Talking Dreads. We'll check. There we go. Yep, we'll see you next time. It's live and local.